Hello, Jordan.
What's up, Michael?
That was a high T Q&A we just did with the mentorship.
Yeah, that was a sick one. That was really good.
But specifically high T.
Dude, it was probably the highest T mentorship call we've had, definitely in 2024, but maybe ever.
I really liked the questions.
Yeah. Yeah, the longer we do the mentorship and the longer people are in there, the better the questions have become, because It's less of a quick, how do I get more money, and more of like a long, they're approaching their business from a long-term mindset, which is just amazing. And there are so many coaching questions, which I love now. Like, there are so many questions about, all right, well, I have a client presenting with X, Y, and Z. How do I adjust this? My client is doing this, as opposed to what's the best way to make sales and to trick people into their pain point so that then they sign up with you, and how do you keep them paying you, and how do you charge for high ticket? Just like, there's none of that in the mentorship. There's literally none of it. It's amazing.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's fun. Makes it more fun for us.
Yeah, it's the best.
Yeah, we don't need to get into the whys, but it's been really good. How are you, bro?
Dude, I'm good, man. I'm good. It's pretty warm here. And I know it's not I know it's not really warm where you are.
It's not bad. It's not too bad. Yeah, we got a high of -1 tomorrow. I feel like anytime I complain about weather, I'll get someone from like northern Alberta email us and be like, "Hey kid, remember, you got it easy, all right?"
Like, well, that's what I do to you, and then you always say that to me. That's literally, I'll be like, "Oh man, it's a little bit chilly here," and you'll be like, "How cold is it?" And I'll be like, "40s." You'll be like, "40s? Where I am, it's this."
That's true. That's true. It's all relative, but I think most people would agree -1 Fahrenheit as a high is like a little cold.
That's outrageously cold.
Whereas, you know, 50 is, you know, if you're a snowbird grandparent, you could call 50 cold, but for a young warrior-aged male like yourself, who's really just in prime shape and just ready to get after life, I think you can handle a little colder. I do.
I am a snowbird grandparent in my soul. I feel like that's my soul.
No, your soul is samurai.
A snowbird grandparent samurai.
Mm-mm. Nope, just a regular samurai. That being said, so. I feel like I'm on day 40 of not scrolling. It's not day 40. I think it's only day 11-ish, but it feels like years.
Dude, I love how consistent you've been with not scrolling. It's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Did you delete the apps completely? You just don't have the apps anymore?
No, I have them.
They're still on the phone? Wow, they're just staring in the face?
Yeah, wow. I'll open one here and there, but I never scroll.
What does that mean? You open it, but you don't scroll. What do?
Open it and X out.
You don't look at anything. You just open it, X out.
I might see the top post, but I'm not scrolling. You better believe that.
Oh, got it. Okay, so you'll open it, see what's on the face.
And I'm just like, I don't want to see fold. This.
You see what's above the fold, and then you're out.
I'm out.
Wow.
Sometimes just by habit, and basically only with Twitter.
You don't scroll on Twitter. Jeez, that's probably the most difficult one.
Instagram, I'll open when someone sends me a link to something, and I'll watch, like you send me hockey videos, which I appreciate, and random other videos, but yeah, no scrolling.
Yeah, hockey videos are great. I'm a big fan of the hockey videos.
I'm almost embarrassed that I didn't know who Connor Bedard was in our last podcast or two podcasts ago.
Dude, I was shocked. He's like one of the best players in the league.
Well, he's also
18. He's also star just player.
Yeah, the like, you know, a top three insane prospect in the last 20 to 30 years, it seems like.
Yeah.
And I caught a YouTube, whatever, search for it. I was like, Connor Bedard highlights, and watched like a 5-minute video of it. It's like, man.
He's insane, huh?
Uh-huh.
He just got his jaw broken. You see that?
No.
Yeah, he got hit. So actually, I have a question. I'm glad that you brought this up. I've been meaning to ask you this. So he got hit, and it looked like a clean hit from my knowledge of hockey, which is still not that high. But it looked like a clean hit. There were debates in the comments about it, but it looked like he got a shoulder to the jaw, but it didn't look deliberate. And he ended up getting a fracture to the jaw. He skated off the ice, he's gone. But it was the end of the period. So the next period starts, and immediately someone on Bedard's team, like they do the face off, immediately someone on Bedard's team throws his gloves off and starts beating the shit out of the guy on the other team who did it. Mm-hmm. Now, it looked like the guy on the other team knew it was about to happen. Like, mm-hmm. he knew that was going to happen. And a lot of the people in the comments were saying, good job by the enforcer. Mm-hmm. And now I've seen this. Like, does that mean, is there one guy on the team who is like the enforcer who will go around the ice, like hurting people if someone on his own team gets hurt? Like, is that what happens?
I would say it's less specific than you lay it out, but in general, yes. In the history of the NHL, there's been unwritten rules that you don't go after superstars, or if
really?
You do, I mean more now, like people hit, you know, Ovechkin's a physical player, like in the modern era of the NHL, I think there's less of it, but no one hit Gretzky ever.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
And if you did, unwritten rule, absolute superstar. Like you don't go after him. Definitely no cheap shots.
I almost feel like it would be the opposite. Like you go after the best people. That's what I would imagine, but I'm wrong.
So to answer your question, then yes, there's definitely like a fighter or a big guy on a team who, if you go after our superstar, we're coming after you, or potentially even we're coming after your superstar.
Wow.
This guy, Stu Bickel, who I played against growing up, he's, a friend of a friend. And he was in the NHL for a number of years. He was a fighter. He was an enforcer. He played for the Rangers. He might have won a cup with the Rangers. I don't remember, but he was a fighter.
Who decides who the enforcer is? Is it like the coach picks the enforcer, or this like the biggest, meanest dude is the enforcer?
Yeah, you just know.
Can there be multiple enforcers on a team?
Sure. But, you know, you're limited on number of roster spots. So it's unlikely that you're going to have like, yeah, there could be. You could have multiple big, physical, like tough, mean guys. Yeah.
And that guy just knows that if someone screws with his all-star, that person's going to get beat up.
Yeah.
Wow. Hockey's the best sport ever.
That's one way to do it. You also have all-star players who will fight themselves.
What does that mean?
I don't know. Like Anders Lee for the New York Islanders.
Okay.
I don't think anyone would say he's the best fighter of all time, but he's the captain and like a skill player and an all-star, and he's gotten in many fights.
So what, like you just mean like the all-star will just also be a fighter?
Anyone can fight in hockey.
Yeah, anyone can fight. But like when I saw the term enforcer, I was like, oh, there's one person on the team that is like the fighter.
Sure. It's less formal than you're making it out to be.
It's not like
a position.
Cool.
It's not like, okay, there's one center on every football team.
Yeah. Oh,
there's one.
Okay.
It's not a roster spot. It's just
I literally
like,
thought it was like the designated fighter. It's like, all right, so if someone fucks with us, like, all right, you're up. Like you're going out and you know what to do.
On some teams, yeah, but it's more unwritten.
Got it. Okay. Man, that's crazy. That's so cool.
I went to a college hockey game a few nights ago with my dad. I went to the Gopher Colorado College game. I used to, like, as a kid, I would do it all the time, and it was very nostalgic. It made me, it brought back a lot of memories. I was telling you, and then the next morning, I woke up, couldn't sleep. I was up at 4:30 in the morning and got through all my emails, designed a couple of programs. Sun was just rising. I was like, I'm going to go find some ice and go skate. But it's been so warm here for most of the winter that I couldn't even find outdoor ice, and it didn't happen, unfortunately.
That sucks.
Yeah.
All right. Last question about hockey for you. Do professional hockey players deliberately like take boxing lessons or judo, or do they learn strategies on how to deal with these fights? Because I've seen a lot of hockey fights now. I've been really digging into them, and there seems to be the strategy of you grab onto the other jersey with one hand to try and keep it at arm's length. And then the other hand is you're just trying to smash him in the face. And I'm like, if they knew judo, they could really do some damage because they grab onto the gi and they toss them. And there was actually a couple of clips of a couple of hockey guys tossing people with their jerseys, like straight up judo throws. And so do you know, like, do they learn boxing? Do they practice like how to do a fight? Is this something they do in practice, or is this just, I'm going to go out there and scrap?
I don't know. And I can't speak for everyone, but based on all of my experience, no, it's not like I'm going to go do martial arts to get better at this. It's just, this guy's a real tough son of a gun who's been fighting, you know, whether it's in practice or in juniors throughout his life. And, or in street fights, in bar fights, like he's just a tough guy who is then fighting on the ice. Not like I'm going to go train for this specifically. There's also sports that overlap well, or not that overlap, but like that complement each other well growing up. Mm-hmm. And like wrestling and hockey are both winter sports. You know, we didn't have anyone that wrestled and played hockey, like a little bit of football hockey, but you know, usually like hockey golf is a common one, or there's a little bit of hockey baseball, but you know, the seasons can't overlap. Some hockey track, some hockey soccer for like complementary skill sets, but not a lot of martial art / hockey, like dual athletes.
That makes sense. That makes sense, man. If a hockey player got good at judo, that'd be a dangerous enforcer.
Yeah. I think you could argue that it wouldn't be the best use of his time, given like the frequency of fights, how much they matter for a hockey game. Like maybe better to like, you know, work on his hands or work on his shooting or work on his quickness or work on, you know, speed. But interesting.
Yeah, but if he gets super good at judo and everyone knows that as soon as he gets a hold of them, they're going to get tossed on their head, no one wants to touch him anymore. So then he'll have open lanes, free shots, just making so many goals every season. Leading scorer of the NHL.
You should bring this to the league. You should start DMing enforcers and being like, hey, I'm going to help you.
You know what you need?
Judo.
Cold DM. Just, hey. I'll DM cold 50 DM. NHL you're, players a day.
You're a big cold DM guy, Jordan.
I am the opposite of a big cold DM guy. I actually want me to read this interaction with you. This guy cold DM'd me yesterday, and I just had enough of these fucking cold DMs, and I just fucked around with him. Here, you'll love this.
Yeah, I want to hear it.
Okay, so this guy DMs me from this random account. It's got like 2,500 followers, zero posts on it. And he says, hey, Jordan, I see that you have an audience that can be monetized easily and you're missing out on an amazing opportunity. Let me know if you want to hear more. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to fuck with this guy. Like, this is just here's my mind. There's no picture of him on his page. I'm picturing a 22, 23-year-old kid who's been influenced by scumbags who are online who are saying cold DM people, do whatever you can, try and make the sale. And he's literally just copy and pasting this and trying to get it to as many people as he can. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to fuck with him, but also hopefully teach him a lesson. So I replied, I said, I'm actually trying to figure out ways to make less money. Can you help with that? And he saw it, and there was like a 3-minute pause, and he, you know, did the typing and then stop and then typing and then stop. And he said, so to make sure we understand each other, you want me to help you make less money, or how is it? and I said, yeah, I need help making less money, please. And he goes, listen, I'm here to help. So if you're not interested, just say so. Take care. So he immediately got a little bit upset about it. And so then I replied, I said, I'm just fucking around with you, man. I get messages like you're doing about 20 times a day. And I don't know anyone who follows this cold DM strategy that actually does well. Only quote unquote business gurus selling programs online, telling young kids to do this. And believe me when I tell you, it doesn't work. My advice to you, spend more time making free helpful content and less time cold DMing people. And he goes, I appreciate the honesty, man. I'm just trying my best and everything that comes up. I believe that when you put in the work, the results will come. And yeah, it must be pretty annoying when people spam you so much with this. Thanks for the tips. Have a nice day. And that was it. I said, wish you the best, man. I'm always here to help. And so it ended up being really good.
Yeah, that's a great interaction, but it's way easier to cold DM 25 people a day than it is to make good content that helps people.
Correct. Yeah.
And by the way, can you please check your microphone? Is your mic hooked up?
Man, I was using the wrong microphone for the first 15 minutes of this podcast.
This is a one-take show, and the show goes on.
Anyway, it's easier. Like you were saying, it's easier to cold DM people than it is to make good content, as clearly referenced by the guy has literally zero posts on his page, but he's sending out that DM to as many people as he can. It's much easier.
Yeah. Yep.
It's mindless. It's mindless to do that. You don't have to think. You come up with whatever copy you have and you just DM people and there's no thinking. To make good content, it's actually difficult. It takes thought process, takes time. And I'm thinking, I'm like, man, you have zero posts. You let's say you actually have good sales copy. You get someone interested. They go to your page. They don't see anything. They have nothing. It's like, there's no way he's made any sales with that at all. None.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
I got a question.
Oh God, what's this going to be? You got a smirk on your face.
No, it's
everyone watching
good.
The YouTube it's, can see. What...
it's a solid question.
Okay, let's hear it.
All right, this is from a woman I used to coach, Megan. Shout out Megan, who made some insane strength gains while we were working together a little while back. She's awesome. Megan said, "Hey, Mike and Jordan, sorry this is about to be a little long. It's not that long, so don't worry. I recently quit my corporate job to pursue a career in the fitness industry. I got a job at a local gym as a personal trainer to get in-person training experience. Thank you for the advice. Almost all of our PT clients have 30-minute training sessions, which goes by very fast, and some only come once a week. I'm struggling to determine how to optimally program workouts for them. It seems like the other PTs basically give these people random workouts each week. I know there's a lot of factors that play into this. So here's a specific example of a client they assigned to me. She has 2 30-minute training sessions per week. She's in her late 20s, 300 pounds approximately, 5'7", with no restrictions when it comes to exercise. She's strong and pretty mobile, but obviously has a very high body fat percentage. The previous personal trainer training her said she's 300 pounds. You just basically need to move her body and cue the random workouts. Can you please talk a little bit about how you would go about her programming? Thanks, Megan."
Great question.
Mm-hmm. It's really cool that Megan made the jump from corporate to what she really wants to do, which is training, which is awesome for one. And two, even if it's not necessarily the best gym from a perspective of getting mentorship and getting help, and like it sounds like you're still getting in-person coaching experience. And 30-minute sessions, you're drinking from a fire hose, you're getting double the amount of sessions, which is really going to benefit you in the long run. So those are both really good things.
Yeah, and just huge props on getting that in-person experience. That's like, we were talking about how much easier it is to send a message than it is to make content. It is easier to make content than it is to coach in person. Like coaching in person is the most difficult, the most challenging, and most people wouldn't do that. So huge props, because it's going to pay off in the long run. And also, like, you know, Mike was just saying, even though you might not have great mentorship, you're going to learn so much from watching what poor coaches do. And like, you're going to learn so much in this opportunity. So it really is, you're going to be learning a ton. I'll start by answering the very first question, which is, how do you optimize a 30-minute session once a week or so, which is you don't. It's like there's no optimal there. It's just, it is inherently suboptimal. I mean, how many hours do we have in a week? And then 30 minutes. And that is just, it's inherently suboptimal. Even 1 hour a week, if you have a 60-minute session once a week, like it's very suboptimal. So to have this client, which is getting 2 30-minute sessions, 1 hour a week, it's not much. And I will say, I don't like random workouts. I don't think that's smart. I don't think that's doing your clients a good service. I do agree that this person just needs to move. That's for sure. But movement can also happen and should also happen outside of those 30-minute sessions. So I think that the vast majority of what's going to happen is going to happen when she's not with you. And that's where your job is really going to come into play, where it's the education and accountability, where you're essentially going to need to take the extra step or steps to help keep this person accountable and to really push her to do things she needs to do outside the gym. The way I think about it is, you know, we all remember a teacher or maybe a few teachers that you had throughout your time in school. which is usually at least through high school, if not college. And usually the teachers that you remember are the ones that did things that went outside their job description. They stayed after with you. They went in earlier with you. They went above and beyond just like the teaching you for that hour a day in that class. And they really pushed you and went out of their they went above what they're paid for and beyond what they're paid for to really help you as much as possible. And I think that's what the best personal trainers do. It's not just the hour or 30 minutes that you're with them. It's like, are you texting them? Are you keeping in contact with them? Are you pushing them to do things even when they're not with you? And those are going to be the people who you change their lives forever. And it's probably why you got into this industry in the first place. So making sure she's, I would say, focusing on steps, try and get at least 5,000, 7,500 steps a day. If you can do that, that's amazing. Really push her, be on her about that. Texting her about that. Making sure she's getting protein at every meal, making sure she's getting fruits and vegetables every day, making sure she's staying hydrated, making sure she's going to bed at a good time. These are things that are going to be super, 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 super important for you to stay on her about. And then during those 30 minutes that you're with her, I know a lot of coaches who would make the mistake of trying to burn as many calories as you could during those 30 minutes. It's a really fucking bad idea to try and like, all right, we're just going to go crazy. We're going to just go nuts. We're going to do sled pushes and we're going to do burpees. It's like, no, let's get stronger. Let's get stronger right now. Let's make you feel better, because she's carrying around 300 pounds. Doesn't feel good on the joints. And there's a lot of potential issues that can come up. So let's get her doing goblet squats, bodyweight squats. Let's get her doing some planks. Let's get her doing some glute bridges. Let's get her doing some hamstring work. Let's get her doing some glute work. Let's get her doing some TRX rows, some dumbbell rows. Let's get her strong so that she can really hold herself, carry herself, improve her confidence. And that's why I think those 30-minute sessions, those two 30-minute sessions should be programmed, which, by the way, in practice doesn't look that crazy. In practice, those sessions look like for example, I'm coaching this woman, Alyssa, right now. She's right around 300 pounds as well. She's almost 32 years old. So it's actually a very similar situation. And she's strength training with me. She's strength training four times a week with me, two times a week. And last night we did one of her workouts. It was an upper body workout. And we started off with single arm lat pull downs. And then we went to kneeling hands elevated push-ups, and then we did dumbbell rows, and then we finished off with some seated dumbbell shoulder press. And between every strength move, we did a mobility exercise. So a hamstring stretch or a hip flexor stretch or an adductor stretch. And that was the workout. It took about 35, 40 minutes, and that was it. And it doesn't look or sound crazy, but that's basic strength training. That's what works. That's what I think you should do during those sessions.
Man, what an answer. That's a YouTube clip. That's a long form clip that you just laid out. I don't even have much to add. I love the accountability around steps. Like the clients you take on early in your career, when time is your asset, when you're not overly busy and you can over deliver with, like, that is going to lay the foundation for your career, those relationships and those people that you can help. I would talk with her in terms of, you know, is she comfortable doing another workout each week on her own, or potentially two more workouts per week on her own? Will she realistically do those extra workouts if you're not there with her? If you think she will, or if she says she will, then having the split with two 30-minute sessions with you in person be like, you know, upper body with you for 30, lower body with you for 30, and then maybe a 45-minute full body session on her own. Or if you can get two more sessions in, getting two uppers and two lowers in during a week where she's doing two sessions on her own would make a lot of sense, just because, you know, 1 hour of total strength training out of 168 hours, like Jordan alluded to, not much.
Wow. I didn't know that. Got it. You just knew that.
Yeah. And Megan, keep us updated on this client. Yeah.
And on your journey as a coach, like, it's just starting out. It's an amazing journey. Keep us updated with how it's going. You are bound to see some crazy shit, and we would love to hear it.
Absolutely.
I remember when I was coaching in person. When I graduated college, I went to a gym. Man, if the owner of this gym hears this, he's going to be pissed. Whatever.
What's his name? Was working at first and last.
first and last name. What's the name of the gym? No, I'm not going to do that. But I was working at this gym, and I was coaching in person, but I also had my online business. But I was like, I wanted to do both, and I was writing articles every week, and the owner of this gym was a huge bulletproof coffee guy, like putting butter in your coffee, and it was just so stupid. Like, and he had all these people who were trying to lose weight, and he's like, you know what you got to do? You got to put butter in your coffee. And like, it sounds like I'm just saying, that's literally what you got to put butter in your coffee. Like, that was what that's what you do. And I was just like, he's my boss, so I can't say anything. But I wrote an article on it about how the bulletproof coffee thing was just so fucking stupid. And of course, like a lot of the people that I trained there found it, and they were posting it around, and they're like, this makes so much sense. I get a call into his office, and he's like, you can't be doing this. And I was like, what? And he was like, you know that I love this. Like, you can't post it. I was like, but that's my website. It's like, I'm not going around here telling people this is my website. And it ended up with, you know, he couldn't do anything. It was my website. If he wanted to fire me, he would have had every right to, and he could have, but he didn't. And made me think about all the stupid stuff that I saw in various in-person coaching gyms. I remember when I was in Columbus training at Westside, I was like, I need to get a job so that I can pay for my bills. And I got a job at this gym out in Columbus, which is funny because during the day I'm training at Westside, one of the greatest gyms in the world. And then I had to get a job somewhere else at like a box gym. And the guy who's running this box gym, I'll never forget this. He's showing me around the gym, and he takes me into the room where they have the body scanner, where like the, what's it called? Where you stand on it. And
in-body.
In-body. And he's like, this is how you use it. And he goes, but just so you know, it's broken. And I was like, what do you mean? He was like, the numbers don't make sense, but you know, it's a good moneymaker because people had to pay to use it.
Really?
And I literally worked there for less than 2 weeks. I was like, I'm out. I quit. Because it was just so bad. But he's like, literally, like, this is broken, but it's a good moneymaker. I was like, fuck this. I'm out. It's terrible. Yeah.
I would imagine there's a lot of like dishonesty and low integrity and like prioritizing money over everything else in every industry, but it seems to be especially rampant in the fitness industry, which is
it really
quite sad.
Is. It really is.
And probably getting better over the years. Like, I think the internet and like more free flowing information has actually helped with that. But yeah, I'm right now just picturing you, because I know you, getting called into the office, knowing exactly what it's about, and having this like slight shit eating look on your face, but also at the same time, like deadpan, like confused, like, why am I, like, what did I do? Why is that not okay? Like, but knowing exactly what was going on and just playing dumb.
That's exactly right. You know me very well. That's ridiculous. Yeah. That's, I was like, what? I don't, oh, that? Yeah. That's why I'm here.
Oh. I didn't know that was. Yeah.
It's good. Yep.
The other thing, going back to Megan's question that just came to mind, is just because somebody is very overweight or like, really, there's no reason to be like, oh, just give her a random workout.
Yeah.
Like
never.
Design the program to the best of your ability, using exercises that she can do with, you know, an overall goal of the program that you're working toward with her. Don't just throw exercises together for any reason, especially like, oh, she's just really big, so you can give her whatever. Like, I don't know. I don't really like that trainer who said that right now.
It's like the biggest cop-out answer ever.
Yeah. If we're talking about increasing calorie expenditure, if we're talking about just like taking joints through ranges of motion, yeah, everyone benefits from that. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't properly design a strength training program.
It'd be like for nutrition, if they just need to eat better.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, great, thanks. Like, now what? There's zero instruction. There's zero personalization.
Yeah. Which, and that's okay, meaning you might not be getting great insight and learning a ton from the people running this gym, but there luckily are other places on the internet where you can get good information and apply it practically.
I would keep a journal of all the crazy shit that you see and then use it for stories on like social media at some point. Like, keep a journal. I wish I did that. Just keep a journal of some of the crazy shit that you see. And just, I think a good rule of thumb is if it feels wrong in your gut, it's probably, you're probably right. You're probably onto something. If like that doesn't make sense, just keep a journal about it. And then eventually one day you're going to have some great stories to tell.
What do you got? You got anything in your questions?
What do you think about those what I eat in a day videos? I got someone saying, I would love to see you do one of those cheesy what you eat in a day videos. What do you think about those? It's a big topic in the fitness community.
Interesting. I don't even know that I understand. Like a vlog of a full day of eating, but maybe in a short form content, so more condensed to like a minute or something?
Yeah. Yep.
I really like them overall.
Mm-hmm.
I used to do them. I used to do like grocery haul videos, top 20 favorite fat loss foods. You know, one of the counter arguments would be like, you don't need to eat these foods, but from the perspective of giving ideas to other people of what to eat, I really like it. And I have gotten ideas from watching those types of videos or just, you know, talking with friends about this, but yeah, I'm a fan. Especially, I remember full day of eating vlogs on YouTube for hitting specific macros or hitting specific calorie numbers.
Which man, that's a real throwback.
I like those too, because it's like, well, how, you know, you take someone who's never dieted properly and they're like, okay, well, how do I get 130 grams of protein and 1500 calories a day? Like, what foods am I going to eat to make this happen? And then seeing that, and it's like, oh, this is how you get that. Like, I think they can be very educational and very useful, so long as you're not going down the path of like, you have to eat these foods and you can never eat these foods, which in my experience isn't the point of those videos, but I'm also less internet savvy than most.
Yeah, I agree. I think they can be very educational for all the reasons you just said. My gripe is that no matter how many times I say, this isn't all you can eat, this isn't all I eat, no matter how many times I say it, the number of people who refuse to comprehend that infuriates me. And it's just like, I think that it ruins it, because I would like to do those because I do think they give great, like how to get 30 grams of fiber in an 1800 calorie day. I think that would be an amazing piece of content. But then whatever type of fiber I eat, I'm going to get a tremendous number of individuals who, no matter how many times I say it in the caption, no matter how many times I say it in the video, they're going to be like, oh, geez. Like, oh, not only do they think that's all they can eat, but then they're going to be like, I can't believe you eat that. It's like, motherfucker, like, I don't want your comments on my fucking diet, but I also left my fucking diet out there for you to comment on. So sort of my fault. So
here's, you're so spot on. And I remember this now from making any type of food related content is, when you mention specific foods in any food related content, like you're taking this tribal religious mentality mm-hmm. that so many people have around foods and like random shitty diets. And then you're getting the worst comments from those types of people yeah. on the content. It's yeah. like, oh, that salmon is, it was, you know, okay, it was fresh and it wasn't farmed, but where was it from? Was it from a blue zone or was it Atlantic yeah. salmon? Like, just the dumbest yes. comments, or even like food choice specific. It's like, I yeah. can't believe you ate beans. Like, beans yes. are a dot of it. Like, and there are people who aren't in this like flexible dieting kind of like normal science-based approach to food choice. They're definitely in like a camp of X food good, Y food bad, whatever it is, carnivore, vegan, like wherever on the map they are. But then they're bringing that knowledge and like emotionality to your specific food choices and making some of the dumbest comments on the internet.
Yeah, it's just annoying. It's like, okay, well, could you do this for someone who's insulin resistant? And it's like, no, motherfucker. Like, this is my video. That's it. That's it.
Or not even could you do this for someone who is insulin resistant, but like I am insulin resistant, so I can't eat this. So like, thanks a lot. It's like,
yes.
Okay. Or yes. Even more insane than that. Like, you know, dude, this is actually coming back to me. I made a video about why fruit doesn't make you fat at one point, why it's okay to eat fruit. And I remember someone, this is like 2017 or 2018, kind of like in those blur years that I barely even remember. Someone commented like, well, I'm in remission from like X kind of cancer. And so I'm not allowed to eat these fruits that you mentioned. So like, thanks a lot. It's like, okay, well, talk to your doctor, because this wasn't a video for people who are in remission from XYZ type of cancer.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's funny. I'm going through something similar to that right now. I've always done these challenges where I lose weight and I show people. And for years, people have been like, well, do this with a woman. So finally, I'm doing it with a woman named Alyssa now.
Which, by the way, those comments in themselves are insane. To be like, oh, calorie deficit works for a man, do it with a woman. It's like,
yeah.
But.
So now I'm doing it with a woman. And now, so keep in mind, she's 30, she's almost 32. She's about 300 pounds. She had a hysterectomy, right? So wow. She has her own serious issues that she's had throughout her life. And there are people who have the gall to come in the comments and say, oh, well, try it with a woman in menopause. Try it with an older woman. And I'm going to lose my shit. And thank God I've got Susan. Like, Susan's here. And I'm going to make a video with her today for my Instagram, like, about all of these comments. I'm going to be like, you want me to do it with an older woman? It's like, here she is. Here she is. Like, she's fucking done it. Mm-hmm. Now, what the fuck are you going to say? Mm-hmm. It's like, it's such a victim and of like, oh, well, they're looking for the way out. They're mm-hmm. looking for the reason why it's not working for them. And that's outside of their control.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's just those comments just absolutely light me up.
Yeah. I think they light anyone up. Like, I don't know anyone who, I don't know, handles that well.
Yeah.
Just the worst.
So full days of eating. Do them.
Full day. They're great content, but you're absolutely, I forgot about the feedback around any type of content about specific foods. Oh, salmon and Greek yogurt? Like, guess chicken's not okay for protein. Thanks. It's like, didn't say that. Just then what you I get ate
culture
today.
Wars too. That, like, I remember I would post about Greek yogurt and I'd say it's Greek yogurt. And then the people from Turkey would be like, it's Turkish yogurt, asshole. Okay. Now I'm entering in this geopolitical situation where you're claiming this yogurt, for fuck's sake.
Yeah. People on the internet.
Yeah.
It's wild, because for all of human history, we just could only interact with people who were in our immediate circle. Like, you know, even go back 100+ years. And if you wanted to say something to someone, you were saying it to their face. And if you didn't, you know, you say something to someone's face and then there could be repercussions for that. But the internet has just given everyone keyboard warrior status. But then it's like, it's a barrier to entry. You want to build a business, you want to help people. Like, it's a cost of doing business for sure. But it's definitely a deterring factor in like wanting to make tons of content for a lot of people.
It's also, that's one of the major benefits of building an amazing business without having a huge audience. Mm. I think having a huge audience is so overrated. It's like, if you can have a small audience and 20, 30, 40 one-on-one clients, you're set. You're set. You have an amazing income. You can support yourself. And and you don't have to deal with nearly as much of the shit that comes from having a bigger audience, right? It's like you don't have to deal with that many of those comments or that many of those messages, or it's you really get the best of both worlds in terms of financial freedom, financial peace. Yeah, you don't have to deal with the call out videos, any of that stuff. It's you have all the financial benefits and all of the fulfillment of working with people, helping them, being a great coach and really making a difference in the world without the drawbacks of just obnoxious motherfuckers. And you'll still get it, but not on the level that you'd have at a significantly bigger audience, which is probably better for your health and blood pressure.
That's a great point. That's a really good point. But then you got to look at the underlying motivation for why someone wants to have a massive audience and like what's going on there in their internal state and their, you know, what has happened in their life up to that point. And then you get people who build and, you know, they're building for a certain reason and maybe think that they might, you know, feel something or like there's some type of happiness or something at the end of the tunnel that exists when I achieve X. And then you achieve X and you're like, oh, that didn't give me what I thought it was going to give me. And this can be with reach and followers and fame. This can also be with money. Like I've been able to relate to it more on the money side of things in the history of my life, which is getting to whatever amount of savings or net worth. And like, then I'll feel safe or then I'll feel whatever. And you don't. And then you reset the target. And then after doing that a couple of times, at least I have been like, okay, well, you know, I'm noticing a pattern here. Like more doesn't give me what I thought it would. So, you know, pull back on chasing that. But I don't know.
You just have so much. You just hit that target so many times.
You know?
That like you're
just, you know, if only I had as much as you. That was a good one, Jordan. That was a good one.
I hit that target and I was like, I'll just hit a new one. Oh, I hit that one. Still wasn't enough.
I share this comfortably because I've heard so many other people go through the same thing in their life.
Yeah.
And I've seen what the non-self-aware version looks like because I've seen 60-year-olds who are like hit 100 million in net worth. And they're like, I don't think I have enough. Like, what if this happens? What if I lose it all? Like, I need to get to 200 million. And it's like, oh my gosh, this is how, like, if someone doesn't get a handle on this, this can be your entire life.
Yeah.
Crazy.
So you've got 100 million saved up?
No,
that's crazy, dude.
See, that's not even like that funny of a joke because it's so far off the reservation. If that's, yeah. Yeah. There's, we're all going to die. So there's no amount of security. Like, you know, Bill Perkins' Die with Zero actually is a book that helped me a lot around how I thought about saving and spending and work and income and distributing saving versus spending over the course of a lifetime. Like you don't win if you die with the biggest number on your screen. Log into your Bank of America or your investment or whatever, investment brokerage account, and you have the biggest number and then you die. Like what are you winning? You're winning giving the government 50% of the biggest number. That's what you're winning. And
that's wild. The government takes that.
Yeah. Estate tax.
What's the logic behind that?
We want to have money to distribute to various things. And this is a form of taxation that we can get away with. I don't know. We can do a little research on the fly.
When taxation in and of itself is like the greatest theft of all time.
Jordan's speaking like a true 1776 American revolutionary. They hate us anyway.
I can't believe we get taxed at the rate that we get taxed. It is outrageous that we just sit down and accept it.
I thought you were going to say, I can't believe we get taxed.
not no, at the rate. I'm okay with some.
You just said, you just said any taxation is the greatest theft.
You're right. Yeah. You know what? It is. I can't believe we get taxed, period.
When did estate tax begin? There has to be, oh, wow, September 8th, 1916, estate tax in the United States. So it's only been around for 104 years.
and we just accept it. Can you imagine if we just all stopped? Just no one did it?
Jordan, I disavow this.
We're going to get canceled. They're going to get
suppressed. No. I'm not worried about anything from the audience. I'm worried about...
No, I don't mean the audience. I mean like the powers that be who run the podcast. And they're, all right, we're not going to let these guys...
Yeah. I mean, you're... Yeah. But here's my biggest fear is that me and all the listeners know how high you are up in the Illuminati. So I feel like you're like an FBI informant and you're trying to get me to say stuff to get me in trouble with the Illuminati.
That's but then where your brain is?
Yeah. Yeah.
Get them, boys.
Estate tax. Wow, this is the Wikipedia page is massive. In the United States, estate tax... why did estate tax begin? It was not until the advent of another war, World War I, that Congress would enact a federal estate tax. Against this backdrop, a federal legacy tax was proposed in 1898 as a means to raise revenue for the Spanish-American War. Like, all taxation is just more revenue for the government to spend on anything. Be it roads or be it give it to Zelensky, like any government expenditure.
Dude, I'm watching this great series right now on Netflix about the Roman Empire. And this has happened all throughout history with all different leaders. Like Caligula, for example, literally spent all of Rome's money on his like lifestyle filled with debauchery and elegance and making monuments to himself. And he had a crazy, crazy life, but he literally spent all the money. And then once all the money was spent, he was like, all right, I'm going to start enforcing taxes just so that he could spend more money. It's just on a larger scale now, or maybe not even larger, just different.
There has to be like, because of the inherent unfairness of life, I think that we do... Like there needs to be some reasonable level of tax, right? Like some people are just born into situations that
agreed
for no fault of their own. They're just in such a bad spot that like there needs to be some kind of support system, obviously. But I don't know. Where do you draw the line on like what is excessive and what is reasonable? I don't know.
Yeah. And what's like... For example, one of the common questions is like, all right, well, how would you know, firefighters or teachers get paid? It's like, well, I personally think firefighters and teachers get paid way too little. And I think that if it wasn't government-based pay, but if it was based on like
free market,
they'd probably get paid way more. They'd probably like have a much higher income. Well,
Some would get paid way more and some would get paid way less because
Like, they'd be better. And
yeah, in Greenwich, Connecticut, like those teachers might make, who knows, and
$2 million.
Southside Chicago, how much is the tax base pulling in? What are our resources like? Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. We don't need to go full. It's 2024 is going to have enough of this. We don't need to go.
Oh yeah. It's an election year, people. We're about to see some crazy shit on the news and social media.
You are going to see some crazy stuff on social media.
Oh, yeah, you're not scrolling, so I'll just be reiterating it to you.
Yeah.
Relaying it. Wrong phrase. Relaying, not reiterating.
You can reiterate it.
I'll reiterate it. Good pod, man.
Yeah, that was a good pod.
Yeah.
What do you want to throw a little CTA on here? You want a right hook? You want to, like a...
Oh, you know what?
We could hit him with a palm down right hook, or we could hit him with a neutral grip right hook. Either depends on your style of boxing.
Or the Stockton slat.
Oh, wow.
Little Nate Diaz.
Yeah, if you don't want to break your hand.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Open fist. Yeah. Should we get him on the email list?
I feel like that's doing them a disservice since we send one email per 19 months.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, never mind. Just join the mentorship. We're going to call Stockton slat. Right hook, join the mentorship. We have an amazing group of coaches in there. We have coaches who are just starting their coaching journey. Like they haven't even really started coaching yet. We've got coaches who are already crushing it, making an incredible impact on hundreds and thousands of people's lives and really building an amazing income and everything in between. We have people who just joined us in the last week, and we have people who joined us several years ago now. So if you want to actually fill out an application so we can just chat and see if you're a good fit for the mentorship, go to the website, link in the description, link in the show notes, fill out the brief application, and we will we'll get back to you soon. By we, I mean Mike will get back to you soon with some questions that we have just to see if we're a good fit. But thank you very much for listening. We appreciate you. Have an amazing week. We'll talk to you soon.
What an episode. Weekly 2024. Have a great day. See you next week.